The Royal Man Report, presented by Kelly's Westport Inn, with Casey Royal Man, Mike Engel, and fake Ned Yost. Produced by Aaron Gunnerk. Outro by Andre and the Giants. And now, the Royal Man Report.
Hey everybody, this is Casey Royal Man one last time here with your final Royal Man Report of the year. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, however you celebrate it. Enjoy this final episode of the year where we have a couple of interviews for you and some holiday greetings. But as always, thank you so much for being our listeners this year. Without you folks, we're just a bunch of guys sitting around in a room talking about sports. But with the listenership and the people going out to Telly's and helping us to make this something special, it has been an absolutely amazing experience. So thank you very much to everybody that's listened this year, and we're going to work to bring you some great guests next year. We've already got some lined up for January and February, and it's going to be some good stuff all the way around. So check it out, and give us a call anytime you want. Leave us a voicemail. We're glad to play them on the air. Send us your comments on our Twitter account at Royal Man Report, and as always, have a happy holiday.
We are joined here on the Royal Man Report by Tommy Hotovy of the Kansas City Royals. He is a left-handed pitcher. He was signed as a free agent this year. He is a Kansas City native. First of all, Tommy, welcome back to Kansas City and welcome to the Royals.
Yeah, thank you. You know, it's just one of those things. I feel like I've been away for so long, and a lot of my friends and even family, you know, haven't seen me play in, you know, a lot of them since college, because I've been in the Northeast playing, and the extent of them seeing me play is either on a computer, watching a web, you know, game, you know, in AAA, or even on TV in the big leagues. And, you know, just to have an opportunity to be close to home and to be a part of an organization that you grew up with is just obviously really exciting.
And you grew up in Parkville, is that correct?
Correct. Yeah, I was born, actually lived in Grandview when I was born, and then lived up in, you know, in Parkville in the up in North Kansas City area basically my entire life.
Where'd you go to high school?
I went to Park Hill for 2 years, and then I was the first graduating class at Park Hill South.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, we got transferred over when the new school was built, and we were the first graduating class there.
Fantastic. And you went to college at Wichita State.
Yeah. Yeah.
And and then drafted by the Sox in 04. So the biggest question that I had and wanted to have you on the podcast was, talk to me about making your major league debut in Fenway Park. What was that like last year?
Well, I mean, obviously, not only, you know, getting to make your debut in Fenway and on a Friday night game, you know, in front of, you know, 34,000 people, just a packed house in a stadium that's got so much history and, you know, just heritage as that does, but also just kind of what it took me to get to that point, you know, through the injuries and having to work my way back, you know, basically up through the system in an organization that's definitely bringing in good talented players every year. Words can't really describe the feeling I had when I ran out on the mound that, you know, that first game. It was just something that kind of a, you know, culmination of, you know, like I said, the work plus, you know, just finally get to accomplish something I've wanted my entire life. And it was just, it was amazing. And not only that, I got to face David DeJesus, who, you know,
he struck him out.
Ex-Royal, I got to face a guy that I'd seen play a bunch, you know.
Yeah.
So it's just, it was a pretty neat deal, and, you know, obviously something I'll never forget, you know, of course.
Especially since, you know, given that you spent all 2008 out with Tommy John surgery, and you had to basically start all over again, right?
Right, and really, I missed all of 08, and then I didn't get to pitch in 2009 until the end of June. So I basically missed a year and a half, and, you know, came back in 2009, was feeling pretty good, And, you know, it's still thrown over the top and everything, but just, you know, going into that off season and going into 2010, I knew I wasn't the same pitcher, and I could tell that, you know, either the time off or through the surgery and the injury just didn't bounce back the way I wanted to, you know. And in 2010, you know, was still thrown over the top, and then around, you know, mid season, July, August, I started flirting with, you know, dropping down and kind of throwing this sidearm approach, and you know, less than a year later, I'm in the big leagues. You know, it's one of those.
It's kind of a unique delivery. I saw it on a YouTube clip, and was that something you were just trying out, or did you have a pitching coach work with you on it, or is it, how did that come about?
Well, you know, when I came back from surgery, before surgery, I was starting, you know, the entire time, and when I came back, they put me in the bullpen. Obviously, because I could get back quicker and didn't have to get built up in so many innings and that. So, you know, I was in the bullpen. I was pitching well, but I wasn't getting lefties out the way that I felt I needed to do. You know, and being in the bullpen and being left-handed, your number one priority should be how you get lefties out. So I just told myself, I go, look, if this is something I'm serious about and this is something I want to do, I've got to get as good as possible against lefties. So kind of just started flirting with the idea of dropping down and just showing them, mixing up angles and showing them different things, and kind of got the approval from the organization to start working on it. But, you know, I didn't have a coach or anybody that had really done that before. So a lot of it was just trial and error. And in 2010, at the end of the year, I was still kind of going back and forth. I would go to the top and I'd drop down, and got really good from the side, but I kind of lost my command over the top. So, you know, I was pitching good against lefties and getting them out, but then when righties would come up, I was walking too many guys and just was really inconsistent. And then I made the decision last year. I was like, look, you know, if I'm going to do this, I need to own it 100% and go with it. And, you know, just kind of ran from there and, you know, basically took it to spring training, did real well, and, you know, 2 months later, I'm in the big leagues.
Whatever you did seems to have worked pretty well, huh?
Yeah, and the crazy thing is, when I was in the big leagues last year in June, I wasn't near as good as I was at the end of the year this year, just because I'd had, you know, 3 or 4 more months to pitch, and then even going in, I went to winter ball this year, and it was even better. You know, it's just, I feel like I'm getting more comfortable. It's just getting better and better, and I'm getting a more consistent release point from that angle, and now able to do a lot more things that I wasn't even able to do in my time in the big league. So, you know, it's just exciting to be at this point where, you know, I feel really good about where I'm at, and physically I feel like I'm just getting better every time out. So
We're talking with Tommy Hotovy from the Kansas City Royals organization here on the Royal Man Report. You mentioned that you're feeling stronger, you're starting to come back from the injury. You had a cup of coffee with the Red Sox last year. What do you think it's going to take to get up to Kauffman this year, and where do you think the team might have you start out?
Well, you know, obviously, you know, for me, my goal is always going to be and always will be to be in the big leagues. And, you know, I'm going to spring training, you know, competing for a job. And, you know, where the Royals decide to put me, you know, if they don't feel like I'm ready right away, you know, to help out in the big league bullpen, hopefully I'll, you know, be in Omaha and just kind of, you know, getting stronger and continuing to improve and hopefully, you know, be able to help the team out at some point during the year. But, you know, obviously I'm going to spring training, competing for one of those jobs. And I feel like, to the point now, obviously, you know, I'm 30 years old. I've, you know, spent a lot of years in the minor leagues and I finally, I mean, I'm to the point now where I know what it takes, for me to be ready every day. And I know what it takes for, you know, to me to be the most successful pitcher I can be. And, you know, I feel like I'm at the peak of my game right now, taking the time off for the surgery and you know, just going through the process of having some failures and then fighting through them and now having some, you know, some success. It's just made me appreciate what I do a lot more and obviously make me more of you know, more aware of what I need to do to be successful.
Now, one of the websites I was looking at mentioned that you are described you as a crafty lefty. I think that there's some sort of obligation to define all left-handed pitchers as crafty at some point in time. Does crafty simply mean that you don't throw 96 miles an hour and that you kind of throw in the mid-80s, or what defines to you a crafty lefty?
Well, you know, definitely any lefty that doesn't throw mid-90s is going to be somewhat crafty, you know, but the thing with me is a crafty lefty to me is not only just somebody that may not throw 95, but maybe somebody that understands pitching and knows how to go about facing hitters and what, you know, what pitches work in certain counts and is able to do a lot more things, maybe throw breaking balls in every count or, you know, mix things up, change things up, change speeds. You know, just a way to keep the hitters off balance. You know, unfortunately, the tag usually just applies to guys that don't throw, you know, mid-90s. But, you know, when I was over the top, I was a guy that would top out at 90, you know, maybe 91 anyway. So dropping down and throwing 85 to 89 isn't much of a difference. All it allows me to do is have better control, more movement for sure, and then more deception.
We talked a couple weeks ago on the show with Ryan Verdugo, who's another pickup. He came over in the Melky Cabrera trade. Mm-hmm. He's also defined as a crafty lefty of kind of the same type. He denied the fact that crafty lefties are kind of weird, or especially bullpen guys are a little out there. You wouldn't describe yourself in that category, would you?
No, I mean, of course not. I feel like we have more fun. We're kind of like, you know,
the bullpen guys have more fun.
Well, you know, a guy that's a crafty lefty is kind of, you know, out there, whatever. I'll tell you what, I've played with a lot of those guys. I've played with guys that, you know, are just off the wall type guys. But you know what? I'm the type of guy that's going to have fun no matter what I'm doing. And I don't think there's any other way to go about it. You know, I'm getting to play baseball for a living. It's something I've wanted to do. I've done ever since I was, you know, 5 years old. And, you know, what other way to go about your business than to have fun and enjoy it and you know, take in every moment you have.
Now, I've got to ask, speaking of having fun, I got to ask you about it. So I'm doing, you know, this copious research today on the internet about you. And,
right.
And I like in the first three links, there's this picture of you with this outstanding porn mustache. Can you explain to me the story behind that? Because I'm guarantee I'm going to show it on the show.
Of course.
It's fabulous. It's a fantastic mustache.
Well, we've, you know, every year at some point we'll do like a mustache, a team mustache, or at least the pitching staff mustache. We'll do like a playoff stash or something like that. But this year, and of course, a quick background again, I went to spring training, the Red Sox sent me back to AA, because they had signed all these guys back, and I was in AA for a month and a half, then was in AAA again for 2 weeks, and then was in the big league. So the beginning of the year, we decided we were going to do Mustache May for the whole pitching staff. And the reason we did it, we have, a fundraiser that the team puts on with a strikeout cancer and kids program. So the pitching staff gets strikeouts. People donate money to this cancer foundation. So we did it to raise money, for that foundation. And it took off. We had, fans growing out mustaches. We had a mustache day at the ballpark. We had people bidding money to get to shave the mustaches off people. I mean, it was hilarious, but I still had mine when I got called back up to AAA and actually shaved it 3 days before I got called up to the big leagues. So was really close to making my debut with a lightly dyed, you know, full mustache.
There wasn't anything lightly dyed about it. That thing was pitch black. And I saw you the other night. You're blonde. So
yeah.
You want to explain that one to me?
Well, it was just an an underestimation of the color I was using, for one. But two, the whole bullpen and the whole pitching staff had it, even our pitching coach, and we were just like, you know what, if we're going to do this, we need to stand out a little bit more. So we all decided to dye them a little bit darker, and then, you know, a couple of days went by, and we decided to dye them even a little bit more darker, and next thing you know, it's pretty much jet black.
See, I think the Royals can use some of that thinking. They all grew these Abe Lincoln things last year.
Yeah, right.
These chin strap beards, but they didn't put any sort of charity or anything behind it. I think they just didn't know how to shave.
Yeah.
So
well,
I think you can bring that absolutely. Bring that idea to surprise this spring. I think we'll all get behind you. You let me know what charity you guys are all growing those out for, and we'll make sure to pump that up.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and then for my sake too, not only are we helping out kids, but any lefty that sits in the box with a sidearm pitcher that has a big old black mustache, you're not thinking about hitting base hits. You're thinking, what is this guy doing? So that's
right. Absolutely, no question about it.
That's just another advantage.
Fantastic. Hey, Tommy, thanks for joining us on the Royal Man Report today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
No, I played for Wright. Jeffrey's there the year the next year.
Okay.
So I only played 1 year. I said football, baseball. I was all about doing baseball. So I said,
Well, you know Kevin House, probably.
Yeah, I know Kevin House.
Kevin and I played us a year together.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Punk returner and all that stuff.
He was all world, man.
Yeah.
He was all
Kevin?
Yeah. Saw him last summer. He's still in town. Doing a good job.
All right. Good.
Thank you for making one of the most memorable memories of my childhood. I can still see you running the bases after that home run at the Sky Dome, man.
Jumping up and down like a little kid.
That was just, it was so crazy. And you watch like these big home runs they had this offseason. I even made the mistake of saying one of the home runs down in Texas when Nelson Cruz hit that grand slam was one of the best home runs ever. And quickly everybody's like, oh, you're forgetting about Joe Carter's home run. I'm like, you know what? You're right. I got too excited at the moment, I guess. But
well, they were saying that that home run that Freeze hit in Game 6. They were saying that was the biggest Game 6 home run ever. And I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah. You're not feeling that Freeze's home run was a little bit bigger than yours or not?
Yeah.
Huh?
I mean, it was a great game, great home run. Now, if he had hit it when he hit the triple, then that would have been big. Then the last strike, that would have been good. But it's still in the series, so I'm safe for one more year. Right, Dr. Gill?
Yes, sir. He did hit the longest home run in the history of Dumont Stadium in Wichita.
He was only
an amateur.
Trimming the tree.
Opening presents.
Plaza lights.
Sitting on Santa's lap.
Christmas morning.
Christmas carolers.
Holiday decorations.
The wonder in a child's eye.
Sleigh bells.
Lighting the candles.
Snow days.
Holiday decorations.
Long lines at Walmart.
Your kids' holiday program.
Snow days.
0 degrees.
Christmas music on the radio just after Halloween.
Shoveling snow.
Snow days.
Scraping frosty windows.
They're out of the doll she wanted.
Your in-laws are here.
You got me socks.
Black Friday.
Personal property taxes due.
Your in-laws are still here.
Your mother-in-law taped Whitney instead of the bowl game.
Grandpa farted.
Had enough Christmas? Tired of the holidays? Kelly's Westport Inn has every bowl game on this season. There's plenty of cold beers on tap, a private heated roof you can put your mother-in-law in. It's just down the street at 500 Westport Road. Christmas is just a little easier at Kelly's Westport Inn. Merry Christmas and a happy holidays from the Royal Man Report.
I'm Sam Mellinger. You're listening to the Royal Man Report.
Upcoming changes. Ryan Lefevre has kind of had some uncertainty. And then, obviously, Frank White has been taken out of the broadcast. His contract wasn't renewed, to be completely accurate. It's crazy timing that we get Joel Goldberg in here because this happens, and now you're kind of right in ground zero. This is right in your backyard. I mean, what are your initial thoughts on this kind of, it's kind of chaos?
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, it's chaos more than anything, I think, because we're talking about someone that may be the biggest icon in Kansas City.
Yeah.
I mean, you could argue that he's the biggest because he grew up here. I mean, obviously, George Brett's the greatest Royal of all time. But, I mean, if you're talking about icons in this city, at least in the sports world, you're talking about George, you're talking about Frank, you're talking about Len Dawson. There aren't a whole lot more, right? So, the interest in this, as opposed to, say, if I was gone, if Ryan was gone, or any one of the rest of us, who some people would be upset about, and other people would cheer. Mm-hmm. That's the nature of our business. It's Frank. So, I mean, that to me is the chaos. I mean, the side of, you know, replacing, and I have no idea who that's going to be, and all this type of stuff, that all plays out. The chaos is the fact that this is, you know, this is a man that everybody feels, I think just about everybody. I mean, if you were to go, I don't read the message boards a whole lot. From my job, I think it's better not to. Mm-hmm. I couldn't help but, you know, read it in this situation, and I think 99% it seemed like were, you know, upset by it.
Right.
It's one of the negatives of our business, and I suppose the sports business in general, is that it is a business. Mm-hmm. In this case, it goes, I think, a lot deeper. I mean, clearly we all know that we have two sides here that aren't seeing eye to eye.
Right.
And that didn't just happen yesterday. I mean, that's something that you saw glimpses of in the paper last year. From my standpoint, a couple of points. I don't know if this is a good or a bad thing. I always try to stay out of everybody else's business. I think that people, you know, when the Ryan thing was happening and everybody said, what's going on with Ryan? Is he leaving? We're seeing rumors in the paper. Is he going to Minnesota? And honestly, I did not talk to Ryan until after it was out there that he was staying.
Uh-huh.
Just because I don't want to be that guy that appears like I'm calling him to find out, you know, could there be an opening? Could I maybe be taking your job?
Right. What,
you know, and snooping around.
You don't want to measure the curtains.
I just, like, you know, I think, and it's the same thing I would think with the players. For the most part, they know when they're free agents or they know when there are trade rumors and all that, but they don't sit there and call each other up. Did something happen or where are you going? We kind of all go our own ways. And at least for me, you know, we spend 6 months together. We all get along really well. So I didn't ask a lot of questions just because I felt like it was not my business. Now, that doesn't keep me too informed, but it also keeps me out of trouble, I think.
Yeah.
So, truthfully, when I saw, I think the rumors you guys would know, I think they kind of started popping up on Twitter Thursday night.
Yeah, I think Nick Wright was kind of the first one to start.
Wednesday night, and it blew up Thursday and Friday.
And my concerns, because you'll remember there were rumors about Frank last year that were not true at all.
Right.
And that's one of my issues, is that there isn't a lot of accountability when you put stuff out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I really respect, say, the bloggers that have accountability. Others just throw it out there, and if it's right, then of course there's some reporters by the way that are like that too. If it sticks, I'm the hero. If it doesn't, forget about it.
You can just work it out in the next cycle.
But this one scared me just because I knew the history. I hadn't talked to Frank since maybe I'd talked to him like the week after the season about who knows end of the you know hey what are you doing that type of stuff, but I hadn't talked to him at all, and so then that. I saw the room. I knew it was Nick Wright. I know that he does Nick Wright's show, so that kind of scared me a little bit.
Uh-huh.
I also had talked to Kevin Shank that day, our producer, and I knew that that he had been let go, which on a personal level was very devastating because he's a good friend. So I kind of put it all together and said, this isn't good. And then obviously everything played out that way. And you know, I mean, it's from a personal standpoint, and for all of you that grew up in Kansas City, I didn't. My wife did. I hear about it from my family all the time.
Yeah.
I'm the guy that would walk to the ballpark on the road every day with Frank, walk home with him after every game, usually go out for a beer and talk about the game afterwards. So, I mean, I've been awfully privileged, and he's a good friend. But this business can be tough. It just it is. I mean, I'm grateful I'm still here. I never know how long I will be here. I mean, it's the nature of our business, whether it's ratings, personalities, egos, conflicts. And in this case, there's obviously a pretty deep history here. And I hope that, forget about the broadcast, I hope that at some point, I know it's not going to happen tomorrow,
right,
maybe not next year, I hope that at some point everybody can get along a little better just because he's a Royal.
And it's very clear right now that things are just horribly raw, mm-hmm. and this is a divorce, and this is all types of ugly, and yesterday was Friday was a really compelling day in Kansas City sports history, and I'm with you. You know, this has happened to, you know, Babe Ruth and Ted Williams and, you know, greats of – they get sideways with organizations, and this is the type of thing that happens. But at the same time, the outpouring of support and love and emotion for Frank White on Twitter and –
which he didn't follow any of that, but
– wasn't he? Probably not.
He doesn't. But, he wouldn't even know how to get there.
But it was overwhelming.
Yeah.
And I can only assume that people will just – rush up to him on the streets if and when they see him, and hope that they will do that as well.
Because
he's an outstanding ambassador for this city.
As someone that tries to get from point A to point B with him on the road, and on the road, it's not as bad, but it can be at home. I've tweeted about that a couple of times on the road. Like, it takes 5-minute walk to the ballpark will take 15 minutes because he's busy signing autographs the whole time. Then I sign one, and he's giving me the hard time. See, you're really important. Oh, just stop it. Frank, look at you signing the autograph. I didn't sign one. Why didn't you sign one? Well, they got me earlier today. Yeah, exactly. But he, I mean, I talked to him yesterday, and he's doing fine, and he knows about that outpouring of support. I mean, he knows that, and I know that he appreciates it, and you know, it's sad in the sense that, and there's obviously a lot going on here. There's a lot of history. There's a lot of stuff people don't know. There's a lot of stuff that people shouldn't know. I mean, when you look up to. I mean, I know all the baseball players. I know all the announcers. Every single one of us have our positives, our negatives, our flaws. But as a fan, you just want to root for someone. You just want to love somebody. And you know, I mean, you look like, I don't know a lot of actors or anybody like that. I've got my favorite actors or mm-hmm. musicians. I don't know that I necessarily want to meet them because I don't want to. I just want to like them for what I see. And in this case, and Frank, by the way, is if you were to meet him, I mean, for those that haven't, he's everything that. You know, you would think he's wonderful. He's a gentleman. He's awesome. But obviously, there's a lot going on here, and so my hope is just that at some point down the road, that everybody can get on the same page because he's a Royal.
Well, I think that I mean, Frank's a great guy from what we see and everything that we hear, and it's pretty certain that he'll land on his feet. You know, this isn't going to be
I'm not worried about him.
It's not a huge hurdle for him, but I think what'll be the challenge that I think the Royals really need to it's going to be kind of a fine line, but they obviously had difference with him as a manager and as, you know, as a coach and as an announcer, but there's an appreciation for him as a baseball player for what he was in his time here, just as strictly as a player. That's a very thin line for the Royals to kind of toe, but I think they need to do that. You know, obviously, it's going to be a pretty salty relationship for the next few years. But like I said, at some point, hopefully, we can all put it back and just appreciate the fact that, you know, I mean, he is one of only three retired numbers for the Royals. He's one of the most recognizable Royals. He's, I mean, historical, 8 Gold Gloves in at his position. I mean, how many people can say that? You know, I mean, he's a very prominent baseball player in history, let alone the Royals. So the ability to – that's going to be the challenge, I think, for the Royals, finding that way to recognize him as a baseball
player. And what I enjoyed about the broadcast, and you guys do and have done a great job with Paul and Frank, I can sit my now nine-year-old son down, and he's going to learn something about baseball. He learned a lot about pitching from Paul, and he learned a lot about fielding from Frank just because – oh, you know, see, he's not going to his left. He's not doing the crossover at second on the double play. And Paul would talk about grips and everything. And so I hope that the broadcast will continue that level in some way, shape, or form.
I think it will. I mean, if you look at I've worked with four guys in 4 years, which makes it sound like I'm either chasing guys away or they don't want to. But I've actually they're all friends. You know, just guys that I really loved being around. Because Frank was really my primary partner the first year on the pre- and post-game show, you know, when Split was healthy. Then Split got sick. Split came over and did a lot of work with me. Jamie Cork was there. And then this year, Jeff Montgomery. So I mean, if you think about, you know, I talk about this business and change and all that, and I say all that truthfully wanting to be here forever. I love this place, and, you know, my wife grew up here, and it's just it's comfortable. But you never know. But, I mean, you look at each one of those guys is now in a different role, you know. Obviously, with Split's passing, he's no longer with us. But you just never know how this stuff is going to go. But I think Jeff's right. I mean, Frank's going to be okay. Everybody loves him here in this town. There'll be opportunities. I'm not worried about him. I just hope that down the road everything can be mended.
Right. We hope the same.
Well, you're very healer, and we have to. So we've got to ask you the question that. On the Royal side, everybody's talking about Frank White and Fox Sports and the Royals. And, I mean, was that the dumbest thing they could have done right now with making the bad blood? Or you were kind of talking about it a little bit with the baseball operations versus business side of things. Where does that all play in with hurting or ruining the image of one of your greatest players of all time?
Yeah, I mean, it's another break on the stack that is already too big. It is an endlessly complicated situation, and if you ask the same question to people on each side, you get two different answers. And a lot of times, it's impossible to know, you know, which one to believe. Most times, it's kind of guesswork on knowing which one to believe. But you know, I guess the sum. And if you have another question about it, I'm more than happy to answer. But I think what you're asking is more generally, you know, what it does to the, you know, sort of momentum to the franchise. And I think for a few days, maybe a week, it kind of killed it. And it's what everybody was talking about, you know, around Kansas City, not just Royals fans, but, you know, even in the middle of a Chiefs season, it seemed, you know, that's what, you know, most people are talking about. I mean, Frank White, George Brett is the best player in franchise history by far, you know, in a paragraph. But Frank White represents something a little bit different and you know, is grew up here, you know, literally helped build, you know, the stadium, you know, Royals Academy, you know, a broadcaster that people, you know, feel like they got to know over the last few years on TV and things like that. And Frank, I wrote this, but, you know, Frank is not blameless in this. I mean, Frank, you know, made some mistakes and you know, could have handled himself better in some ways. But, you know, my gosh, like, you know, there's two former players. Exactly. There's two former players that you kind of, you need to keep happy. And they're doing it with one of them. And it's just, it's disappointing. It's sad that it came to that with Frank. I mean, so part of the, I may have even written this in a comment. I was having this conversation with somebody and, you know, a friend, a supporter of Frank's, and sort of I was relaying some of the things that I've heard from the Royals, from the broadcasting side of it about, you know, the perception of him being a diva, you know, a sense of entitlement, some of these things. And, you know, I was like, you know, there seems to be this sense of, you know, gosh, like, who does this guy think he is? And that was just sort of something that came out of my mouth, you know, in this conversation. The guy goes, he thinks he's Frank White. You know, that's who he thinks he is. You know, he's the guy that played. Right, exactly, right. So, right. It seems like it's one of those things where it's so weird because this happens all across sports, not just with the Royals or the Chiefs or whoever, but where us as fans seem so clear, you know, but it's just the organization sometimes can't get out of its own way. It's like, yeah, these kind of things keep happening. And like I said, it's not exclusive to Kansas City sports teams, but it's right. Just sometimes you wonder why these things happen on a professional level when it seems so clear to all of us. Well, the other thing that's really frustrating, and we were talking about the Chiefs earlier and sort of the relationship between Todd Haley and Scott Pioli, and it's sort of frustrating that there isn't, at some point, a lot of these things I think can be solved just with communication and just, you know, a third party saying, you know, hey, Scott thinks this, Todd thinks this, we need to work this out right now. And I think that almost the exact same thing would happen with this situation with the Royals. Frank, we've heard you're doing this. Why, you know, what the hell, man? You know, and then that would be Frank's opportunity to be like, look, this, and this, and you guys aren't listening to me. And, you know, we need to meet in the middle here and figure something out because this situation just isn't doing, you know, it's not productive for anybody. And look, it's really easy, right, for any of us to sit here and say, like, you know, I've made a million mistakes in my life, you know, with relationships and stuff like that, where, you know, I'm sure if it was important enough for six people to be sitting around in a room talking about it, they'd be like, God, why didn't he just say something? Why didn't he communicate? But a lot of times it's easier, you know, when you're coming from the outside. But, you know, the Royals, what is so frustrating about this, and I do believe that there's going to be a reconciliation between, I think that, you know, 5 years down the road, they're going to be, but what's so frustrating is it is so clearly obvious to everyone, the involved parties included, the Royals are diminished without Frank White. Frank White is diminished without the Royals. I mean, both sides are so much better with each other than apart. It's really for people that care about the Royals, for people that know Frank, remember him as a player, whatever. It's just really frustrating. That part of it is just makes it doubly frustrating.
Well, I think it makes it harder, too, being All-Star Game here as well, because you've got to represent the city, and I think nothing better. I mean, again, yes, George Brett, Royals equals fantastic, but Frank White just is so, I think the fans can relate to him more because he is so approachable. I mean, I've seen him at the stadium 1,000 times. A fan will stop him in a parking lot, and I'll talk to him for 20 minutes about
I've been that fan. He stopped me one time.
So I think with the All-Star Game, it just hurts because you want to be able to be like, well, look who we've got. Because you've seen it in New York, you've seen it in Chicago, you've seen it in L.A. with look who they can dish out. Well, look who we've got. And now you're kind of like, I think from the fans' perspective, it's, well, what do we we do now. I mean, the opening day was so, the fans were so excited last year. You had Bo Jackson, you had George Brett, you had Frank White, and I think All-Star Game year now they're like, hey, George, what are you doing?
Yeah. I mean, I think part of it, too, is that, you know, George is such a great player. I mean, one of the best, you know, not the best player in Royals history, one of the best players in baseball history. And, you know, a first ballot, 90-whatever percent of the vote kind of Hall of Famer. And, Frank, what you mentioned, this is what jogged my memory, is when you say he's so approachable. And I think, like, there's a certain – he's a really great player, but he's, you know, he's not in Cooperstown. But, you know, a 20-year, right, or 18-year, you know, career. And I think – there's no way to know this for sure, and I might be just making it up, but I think part of the connection between Kansas City and Frank is that there's a certain feeling you can allow yourself to believe that Kansas City helped create him. He grew up here, a few miles from the stadium, and not just, you know, the construction crew thing, but, like, what I mean literally helped create him in the sense that he was not a baseball player. The Royals put him in this academy and made him a baseball player. And I don't mean that to take away from, you know, Frank had to work hard and be good and all those things, but the Royals almost literally made him into a baseball player. And that is a unique, it's just a beautiful thing that you can't find with, you know, either George Brett or, you know, sort of, you know, Bo Jackson, which, you know, the athlete of my youth, you know, that those guys can't provide. Those guys were, if George Brett wasn't the Royals' best player of all time, he would have been the Angels' best player of all time, or the White Sox, or the Rams, you know, whatever. There's a certain sense that Frank White could have only happened in that environment when the Royals were doing this academy that I don't think anybody else was doing at the time. And it's just a very cool thing. And you're right, it's a shame that, like I said, I think they're going to make up, but I don't know that it'll be by July.
No, it's a shame that it won't be. Yeah. By July 2012.
Hopefully it happens. And one last question, we're going to let Miller get out of here. But Kevin Shank, you know, how does he get tied up in this? And is it just, would we even be talking about Kevin Shank if he went away at the same time that Frank White went?
Again, it's, his situation is tied with Frank in some ways, but he's also a different person. And there's also some, you know, uniqueness to his deal. And there are a lot of, and I've heard a lot of theories about, you know, why they did them at the same time and all that. But one thing that I have heard that Kevin mentioned, actually, is that it's not uncommon at all. Actually, I think it's the rule that, you know, clubs have right of, either they call it right of approval or right of refusal on broadcasters. But Kevin said he's never heard of a club having right of refusal or approval on a producer. And the thing that surprised me about that move is that Kevin has been producing Royals broadcasts for, I think, 17 years. Another local guy. He's, you know, grew up in Overland Park, went to Shawnee Mission, I think, West. But anyway, but I never heard anything other than, and it's not like I was asking people about Kevin Shank, you know. But I never heard, every time that Kevin's name was mentioned, it was one of the best in the business, a professional. I love working with this guy. You know, it wasn't just, you know, the kinds of, like, soft compliments that you might give for a friend or a coworker or something. I mean, this guy has a you know, at least from everything that I heard, a stellar, not a good, but a great reputation. And that part of it was hard to understand.
So continuing with the Royals talk here, let's start with the big conversation the last month. We've had Joel Goldberg in here. He talked about it the week it happened, actually. Talk about perfect timing for us. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Mellinger talked about it last week. But Frank White and Kevin Shank let go by the Royals. What was your thoughts when you heard that Frank was let go?
It would just seem like, you know, even as I got into talking to some people and calling people and kind of figuring out what happened, you know, this has probably been said, you know, dozens and dozens of times, but it just seemed unnecessary. You know, unnecessary to fire Frank White and to get rid of him, but unnecessarily for it to go down like it did. You know, it just didn't seem like, it was just kind of, you know, unsavory, not only for, you know, for Shank and White's perspective, but also just for that, you know, the Royals had to have known that it was going to cause, you know, momentary uproar, and they still went along, you know, they still went ahead and did it. So, you know, it just seems like it's something that the Royals really didn't need to do, or at least didn't need to do it like they did it. You know, there's obviously, you know, you hear that, you know, there's two sides to every story, and perhaps Frank could have handled things better too, but it just seems like for an organization that's where they're at right now, that it's one of the last things they should have done.
I think that was the one of the things that we've talked about it on the show that just kind of hit it, just the poor timing of everything. And something we talked about in Mellinger, but I'd be curious to get your thoughts on it. What do you think as far as how the Royals have, like, they've garnered a lot of goodwill so far, just this past year with all the farm system and everything, but this, that kind of derailed a little bit. I mean, what's your thoughts on, have they as an organization, how they've kind of embraced everything and tried to use that going forward? I mean, are they trying to take that kind of groundswell of positiveness, so they're using that correctly going forward, you think, or have they kind of mishandled it a little bit? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, taking the White situation out of the equation, I think they've done a pretty good job in the last year. I mean, I really, you know, for, you know, what they've done, I just think, you know, you get into discussions about professional organizations, the Chiefs, Royals, whoever, about, you know, if they're doing things the right way. You know, are they, you know, handling the fans correctly? You know, are they, you know, thinking of the fans first? And when it comes down to it, you know, most organizations, they just don't think of the fans first, which is okay if you win and you produce and you do things. You know, Royals fans just want the Royals to win more than anything. And, you know, you get talks about, you know, are the Royals, you know, do they do stupid stuff from time to time? Yeah, but most businesses do. Most organizations do it. They just need to actually win, and it will solve everything. I mean, it doesn't matter what they do off the field. I mean, last year, the Chiefs went 10-6, won the division, and there was a lot less, you know, animosity. There was a lot less other stuff going on that people were talking about. This year, you're going to talk about how the Chiefs do stupid stuff, how they don't spend enough money, how they, you know, just win. That's my big deal. I mean, and I don't like when a lot of times people come from the outside, and because an organization doesn't win or they don't do this thing, you know, other things, that then they point at, you know, things they do off the field or things they do on the business side. It's all about winning. I mean,
well, it gets compounded too, because you got the futility of the Chiefs the last 2 months. Then you had the Fan Fest canceled. Then you had the Frank White thing, and people don't really care what organization is screwing up. It just seemed to be like this giant ball of suck for the last 2 months of just tone deafness for the fans, and so that was part of our grievances, I guess.
No, I mean, I think it's all legitimate. I just think from the Royals' end, you know, the one thing that they can do for the fans is, you know, forget about all the giveaways or the good public relations or anything. Just, you know, just win. I mean, that's the whole deal. And I feel, sound like I'm like Herm Edwards on ESPN right now. Yeah, yeah.
Just win, baby.
But, yeah, I mean, that's, it just, it seems like it's a debate and a topic that, you know, you discuss when a team loses. But when a team wins, mm-hmm. people don't talk about, you know, their PR, if they're doing things the right way. I don't know.
Big Net Minute.
Oh, who did that?
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket.
Uni is back. A big Royals welcome back to Unieski Betancourt, who was signed to a one-year contract to be a utility infielder for the 2012 American League Central champion Kansas City Royals. Let's not focus on the fact that numerous baseball sabermetricians have called Uni the worst Major League Baseball player. Don't focus on the fact that his defense is lacking. Don't focus on the fact that we already have a number three on the team. That's real Ned Yost. And don't focus on the fact that we want him to platoon at third base to give Moose a break versus lefties, and that he's never played third, and that his splits against lefties are only 20 points higher, and nearly equal in left-handed futility. Don't even focus on the fact that he hasn't played second base since 2005. Just look at that smile. He played in the playoffs last year. And remember, playoff tickets go on sale to season ticket holders first, and season tickets are on sale now at kcroyals.com. This has been your Fake Ned Minute.
Jack here, where we need Jack here.
we got him on the spot. Welcome back.
Big Ned Minute.
Oh, who did that?
Hi, this is JP, also known as Lil Frenchy. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to all you Royals fans. I can't wait till spring training. Go Royals! Bye! P.S. Frenchy and Duffy Wong.
Happy Holidays, Royal Man Report. From Patty Casey, I would like to wish a Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa to all the Royals fans. Go Royals!
Hey, this is Mike from the Royal Man Report in Kingston, Hopkins. I wish everybody out there, especially our listeners, Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. And thanks for listening to the Royal Man Report.
This is Casey Royal Man, one final time, wishing everybody Happy Holidays and thanks for listening. And we'll be back January 1st at Kelly's Westport Inn for our special super show to start the year, 1-1-2012. First Royal Man Report is your chance to come out and join us, so come out to Kelly's, 500 Westport Road. Join the guys from Soundtrack of the Week, Dwayne Fake Ned, and myself, Michael Engel, Jeff Herr, and maybe even Sam Zaffanero, as we bring you the first Royal Man Report of the year and we watch the Chiefs beat up on the Donkeys at Kelly's. So we'll see you there, 1 p.m., January 1st. Until then, happy holidays, everybody, and have a great new year. Be safe and go Royals.